This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 7:45 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng. Kusu Chuang is getting ready to speak to Kenny Goh, CEO of Macro Kiosk, on The Breakfast Grill today. Macro Kiosk is a mobile solutions provider, and they were last on The Breakfast Grill, I think about 3 years ago. And at that point in time, they had just started to go big into the kind of SMS telco service. And that, at that point in time, it was really, they were the disruptor in the market. But now, are they being disrupted by other forces in the market? For instance, are businesses going with free options like WhatsApp and Line and all the other options for that? We'll have to find out more on The Breakfast Grill. Kenny Goh, CEO of Macro Kiosk. Now, speaking about telcos, Norwegian group Telenor and Saudi operator STC are both considering whether to continue their operations in Malaysia. Reports us that they, both Telenor and Saudi Telecom, could be exploring options to exit.
To exit. And these news reports have come from all over the place and picked up by the local newspapers.
So what is this? I mean, is the telco price war that we've been talking about really starting to take a toll on the shareholders?
Yeah, I really wonder how two separate telco, global telco companies are making the same decision, getting the same intentions, getting reported
the same time.
The
coincidence is a little suspect.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. And these are pretty big stakes as well. You don't kind of wake up one day and say, oh, I want to sell Digi, you know, because Telenor's stake in Digi is about 49%, mm-hmm. and that stake is worth almost $5 billion, and the Saudi stake is worth almost $2 billion. So these must be decisions, if they're true, that have been brewing on for a while.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the Malaysian market, because as we know that the industry is maturing here, it's getting to be quite saturated already. The big four are kind of struggling to maintain and chase for market share, with the incumbents coming into the market forcing the new entrants coming to the market forcing the incumbents to drive their prices down. Whether or not the shareholders think that it's worth waging this price war, maybe they might be looking at other high growth markets. Malaysia may be already fully saturated and they think, well, it's not worth staying in here.
Yeah, I like how you termed it when you said big four rather than big three, right?
It used to be just big three. It's big four now, isn't it?
And that's really a sign of what's going on. I don't know what drove these decisions. When you look at Telenor's results in the second quarter, it wasn't very good. They had a 4% revenue drop. And coupled with the highly competitive landscape in Malaysia, this may be driving them to question whether it is worth it to maintain a presence in Malaysia. Because in the scheme of things, Digi, for example, may be quite small to the overall revenue growth of Telenor. And also, we have all these new developments, new ideas, new products coming on into the market. For example, IoT, which is apparently Telenor has been the ideas and the research that have gone into this kind of revenue generation has been going on for a while. So perhaps they might want to focus on other things. But my question is, who will buy into these huge, gigantic stakes?
Yeah, well, that is a big question to be answered.
I don't know if the local
can
guys,
take up,
for
that
example,
stake, right?
Maxis's stake by the Saudi parties. Does Binaryang have enough financial resources to take over that? Recently, recalled that Maxis had a change in dividend policy, which halved dividends, and that kind of cut the funding support for Binaryang's loans, which they have to the extent of 4 or 5 billion. This places tremendous pressure on Binaryang's funding and debt servicing ability.
You know, Jules, I mean, that's a really important question to ask. Who will take up these giant stakes, right? Maybe what we could be seeing here, or what we could be on the cusp of, is a real shift in the landscape of telcos. We could be looking at consolidation. We could be looking at people just dropping off the radar. I mean, what we took for granted as the big three, now the big four, could be completely revamped in the future, right?
Yeah, and I think that the end result would be good for us, because
as consumers,
if they can sell it at a good price, and if somebody who has the wallet, the funding capacity to take up these stakes, could inject more creative and innovative products into the market, and that can only be good for consumers.
However, Digi.com, not so good for them because the share price fell to the lowest intraday level since July 25th. It was 4.88 ringgit yesterday. We'll keep an eye on this share price if, in fact, it will be moving later after the opening bell. But taking a look at other companies in the news, Tanjung Offshore has bought a 67% stake in Hills Education Group that will enable it to venture into education and training development. Really quite a sharp pivot in my books. I mean, what was an oil and gas company?
What do you think? Must be oil and gas, right? I don't know. It's just a hunch.
I mean, I don't see any synergy at all from oil and gas to education. However, maybe, you know, things are so bad in oil and gas that this is
anything
the way to make
might
money.
Be better.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk about diversification.
Yeah, absolutely. They used to be handling all these offshore oil field service provider, both in the upstream and downstream sector. And I guess this is one of the fallouts in the oil and gas sector. We, of course, have heard of Swiber in Singapore, which went through even worse times than offshore. I guess you want to anticipate where you're going and try to avert disaster.
How do you think investors will respond to this? Because on one hand, it's really good that they're able to pivot and, kind of look out of the oil and gas sector. You realize that this is not doing well, let's move over to this sector instead. Whereas on the other hand, you're thinking, well, what expertise do they have in education and business development? It's so far removed from oil and gas.
Yeah, investors hate companies that are not focused on what they do well. But I guess investors have also priced in the kind of troubles that are happening in the oil and gas sector. So the Tanjung Offshore share price has just fallen off a cliff. And new investors might think that this is a new business. Investing in an educational business, of course, they would have to assess the ability of the management to go into this new space. We as a country are trying very hard to establish ourselves as an education hub.
That's true.
We are attracting a lot of students from around the region to study here. Currently about 150,000 foreign students are in Malaysia. So that is quite a captive market.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I agree on all those points. But, yesterday on the front page of The Sun, if I'm not mistaken, there was an exclusive investigation by that paper to show that we are, in fact, I think the headline was fake students, students coming in under student visas, but in fact, just finding jobs here, illegal jobs here, and, being part of the illegal immigrant population.
Worsening the graduate unemployment in Malaysia,
there
about 25%.
But still on the note of oil and gas, now, just take a quick look at Sona Petroleum, which is an oil and gas special purpose acquisition company. They have announced that shareholders of Sona will get 49.38 cents per share by November.
Yep, so I guess this is the close of a chapter when the idea of SPAC was created to, in the words of Tan Sri Ranjit Singh, the chairman of Securities Commission, to bring the idea of private equity investments to the people, which used to be the domain of the very rich. You can only put money in the region of millions into a private equity investments. And private equity is an area which gives very good returns as well. So SPAC was supposed to be that. But we know that is all history because of what happened in the oil sector, which caused very turbulent developments in the SPAC sector as well.
So it's not the structure of the SPAC, but rather the timing of the oil price crash, right?
The structure can be used for anything. It's just that we saw it being used most in the oil and gas sector. In fact, there are consumer SPACs, and this may work out. Time will tell.
Was it Red Sena, right? So
that's
under
right.
FMB. So they're still in the stage of identifying and screening potential assets for its QA, qualifying assets. However, as we mentioned, Sona Petroleum, not such good news for them. Click is in the liquidation process. However, Reach Energy and Hibiscus, I guess, some bright spots in the SPAC sector because for Reach, SC has approved their QA in August, and Hibiscus the first Malaysian SPAC has successfully completed its transition to a fully-fledged oil and gas company.
Click, on the other hand, doesn't really want to give up their idea of a SPAC. They're fighting this with a judicial review of SC's decision. So we will see.
It's still in the process. Yeah. It's still in the process.
They're still hanging on.
7:54 right now. Ma Sing is urging banks to consider relaxing loan approvals and provide up to 95% financing for first homes, 90% financing for second homes, and 70% financing for third homes. Well, what do you think about this, Jules, about having this kind of staggered financing structure?
I think we've got to look back at the history of why they are asking and they're clamoring for this in the property sector. We see that the property sector has not done very well this year, and Bank Negara over the past few years have been clamping down on the property sector, restricting loans that are given to the property sector. I think in the words of Bank Negara, they want to avoid speculation in this property sector. So the property developers have been hurting for quite a while. So they now focus attention on first-time home buyers, which are, I suppose, are quite sacred and quite
genuine buyers, right?
Yeah, you want to help them. Yeah. You want to raise the standards of and raise the ownership in the country of houses and homes in Malaysia. So they want to make this special concession for the first-time home buyers. But still, I think if you throw loans at first-time home buyers, the question is whether they can afford to service the loans, and the question is whether these homes are still within the realm of affordability.
So what about the second and third homes, buyers of second and third homes? The fact, is Ma Sing trying to say, well, banks don't reject them outright, maybe just provide less financing, or in this that way you get to weed out the speculative buyers?
Possibly. And I guess banks also have their standards of how they look at the eligibility of borrowers. Perhaps let banks do their jobs. Maybe they should take risks on their own. But then I guess the subprime crisis is still fresh in the minds of both the regulators as well as the rest of us. We are quite afraid of the kind of systemic effect that can happen to a country. So you don't want lenders to go crazy in approving loans.
Well, we're just a few minutes up to the 8 o'clock news bulletin. But before that, Stephen Levitt, the author of Freakonomics, he and other researchers at the University of Chicago and Oxford have mapped out the Uber demand curve. And what they found out was that US consumers alone are reaping billions of dollars a year in benefits, far greater than the losses borne by taxi owners.
Yeah, and this is a classic theory in economics that the demand curve is downward sloping to the right, which means that the lower the price of the product, the more people would buy it. It was just a theory until now, because the author of Freakonomics decided to mine the kind of data that can come out of Uber, because Uber's data is real time, and they have things like search pricing, which reflects the ups and downs of demands by consumers. And they found that based on the 48 million interactions that Uber had analyzing riders in San Francisco, Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York, they have proven that the demand curve is actually downward sloping.
This is really quite fascinating, because you're using real-time data, real-time consumers to prove an economic theory. I mean, this is really kind of geeking out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's technology. Technology will allow us to test out economic theory. And more, I think economists are using data to kind of justify or prove their theories.
Okay, we've got the news bulletin coming up in a couple of minutes. But after news, we have The Breakfast Grill. We've got Macro Kiosk, the mobile solutions provider on The Grill. Chong will be speaking to the CEO, Kenny Goh. So stay tuned for that on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.